It's Hoffman Show here on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Tischler Tuesday in the books. Great to have Mitch back on the show. Tomorrow, another old favorite of ours is going to join us. He used to join us on Thursdays during the season, but Wednesday is where he'll go for us this week. Dan Pizzuta, formerly of the 33rd team, they dissolved their media division for reasons I don't know. Guess what didn't dissolve? Dan's football knowledge. So our good friend Dan Pizzuta is going to join the show. Very excited to have him back, get his takes on a bunch of these different players. He's been studying the film all offseason. He's great around draft time. I think actually that's when I first came across his work was draft time last year. So excited to have Pizzuta on the show with us tomorrow. I believe 5 o'clock is when we have Dan slated. So with that said, though, Anthony, do you remember where the pick six open is? Did you actually have that pulled up and found it in the whole deal?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, it's good. It's where we left it. We haven't done this in a while. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time for the pick six.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the pick six at six.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level and build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
All right, here we go. It is time for the pick six at six. We take the most interesting things that Adam Peters and Lance Newmark said today at their press conference. And it starts, of course, with
number one.
Yeah, that's how it works. Number one. And we are about 50 hours at this point from the NFL draft. So much work has been done. For Adam Peters, what are the next 50 or so hours look like getting ready for Thursday night's first round?
That's a great question. It's probably different for every team, and sometimes it's different every year. I think the next 48 hours, we're just really refining our board and just making sure we're challenging ourselves on different scenarios, different things that may come up. You know, really, you know, you got two players right next to each other. Who would you take and why? And talking to the coaches and how would this player fit? You know, does he fit your vision? And so just the board's pretty much set. It's just like a little bit of tinkering here and there. And then you make some phone calls too. You make some phone calls like, okay, you want to come up? Do you want to come down? And just get an idea of what's going to be available for you. So you're not making all those decisions in real time in those 10 minutes that you have. So it's a fun couple of days. It's cool to have all the scouts here and really exciting.
And that's the thing that I appreciate about teams that do this right. You are prepared for the draft. You do all the scouting work, but then are you prepared for actual draft night? You still don't have folders of information and guys arguing over players by the time you get to the actual time that you're on the clock or the time that someone else is on the clock that you want to get there. You know, Adam Peters joked about, you know, yeah, you know, we're prepared for everything. If Abdul Carter's there at 27, yeah, we might trade up. So the ability to be prepared, be ready, have had the arguments, know where your trade calls are, be ready to know who your point of contact is. Hey, we got a guy in our front office that knows a guy in that front office, so that's going to be the guy who makes the call, or I know the GM, or Lance knows the GM, or I know the assistant. Like, you know how you're going to attack what you want, and preparing for the draft versus trying to do any kind of final scouting evals. Like, you're probably not going to find some new player like, this guy, I haven't seen him on anyone else's board. Like, you're not doing that. You're preparing to make the most out of this weekend. And last year presented a pretty unique opportunity that Adam Peters was asked about, and would he do it again?
Number two.
What happens if the Eagles call again? Last year, a lot of folks, I think fans got upset that they traded within the division. And obviously, look, the dude that Philly got in that deal is currently the best player in that trade. Cooper DeJean, I mean, which makes sense, by the way, because they traded up for him, but a guy that came on, changed their defense in the second half of the year and helped them win the Super Bowl in a very literal and direct sense. So what happens if the Eagles call again and you know this was the one team standing between you and the Super Bowl last year and they're calling you because they think they can make their team better?
That's another really good question. You think about that, but I think it's like a lot of things, case by case. And what is the trade? Is it the best move for your team? And you know, can't do. I don't personally believe in you know, being scared about trading with a team within your division. If you think the trade's a good value for you and you can get some good picks to help your team get better, then definitely consider it. Some cases it won't be. And so some cases you think, all right, maybe we don't want to do that for whatever reason, but I don't think that we'll ever shy away from that, taking those calls. And a lot of times you'll have a lot of picks on, you know, or a lot of trades kind of lined up. And in that particular instance, the Eagles trade was by far the best trade in terms of value that we got. So we made that trade.
And he would do it again, I'm sure, in a heartbeat. Because, yeah, Ben Sennett's got to play better in year 2 than he did in year 1 for that to look like a good trade 5 years from now. But they got Saner still. They got more out of that trade as well. And, yeah, you're going to give up a player. It is what it is. But you got to make the – ultimately, what you're looking at is your own team and the ability to say, did we get as good as we possibly can in this draft? And if the answer involves trading back with the division rival – and you think the upgrade to your team is better than the upgrade they might make to their team, then you pull that trigger. Or if there's not another chance to make your team as good as possible. Because what happens if you know, like, oh, man, Cooper DeJean's a good player. Like, he's going to be really great with them. That sucks that we know that that's who they want. What happens if Cooper DeJean gets hurt? Oh, you pass up an opportunity to get better on your side of things. So you have to kind of act in your own interests and not totally ignore the other side of the trade, but that's why you ultimately trust your board and trust your rankings as a general manager. Speaking of your board, last thing before we take a quick break, come back with the back half of the pick six.
Number 3.
How does Adam Peters put together his big board, if you will?
Yeah, I think that's another really good question. There's guys that we know that aren't going to be there, so it wouldn't be. If they were there, yeah, we'd take them, but we're fairly certain they're not going to be there. But there is a group of, I don't know. This draft is interesting just because very little certainty after, you know, the first 10 picks or so of who's going to go where and why and what's going to happen and all that. So we have to be ready for a lot of different guys to fall to us or to not fall to us, and so. We have done that where we've done an exercise where we just ranked, you know, this group of guys, however many it is. It could be 10, it could be 5, it could be 20 of, okay, will they be there? All right, and if these guys are there, should we stay and pick? Or should we trade down? Should we trade up to go get one? So really challenged ourselves to do that before we fell on the clock. That way we'd be able to make a decision pretty quickly.
And again, these are decisions that are not just being made for 2025. It might seem a position like running back. And I know some people hate B-Rob or don't think B-Rob's any good. And so pretend he's good for a second if you're one of those people. But they've got if they go into the running back room this year with the guys they've got NFL running backs. They've got even quality NFL running backs. But they have none of them signed for the future. And so a position like running back or a position like defensive tackle, like, they're okay at defensive tackle right now, for sure. But you have to look beyond just this year and know that Daron Payne is probably in his final year in Washington. Like, these are the types of decisions that you're looking at when you rank those positions, you rank those players, you take them out of the horizontal tiers of this guy's got a second round grade, this guy's got this, and you actually say, all right, if these two players are the two left for us on the board, who we taking? You want to have those discussions ahead of time. That way you don't get pulled in a direction on a whim and the heat of the moment, and you've done your concerned or concentrated thoughtful work ahead of time. When we get back, that concentrated thoughtful work also includes looking at players who have on or off field concerns. How does Adam Peters parse those out? You'll hear about that and more next in the back half of our pick six. But first, the latest from the world in women's sports presented to you by Wawa. Chicken how you wanna at Wawa with customizable roasted or crispy chicken sandwiches. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. So pick six at 6, we hit the first 3 things that we wanted you to hear from Adam Peters. He answered 26 questions at his press conference today. So unfortunately, 20 things got left at the cutting room floor. But these we thought were the 6 most interesting and intriguing.
Number 4.
Adam Peters has made his career in Washington so far picking guys that are very high character. It is a feature of what he wants to do. The Commanders tag gained lore last year with guys like Jaden Daniels, Johnny Newton, Mike Sainer, still guys that play a certain way, bring a certain attitude, bring a certain leadership, maturity, all of it. But we also know that there's a ton of talented guys that may have not had the best circumstances or may not even just be the best dudes. And sometimes if you can get them in the right environment, you do that and you hope that your culture can bring the best out of them. So for Adam Peters going into year two, how does he evaluate guys that have questions like that? Guys that would be considered or have some kind of flag for a character concern?
Yeah, that's a great question, excuse me. And it really starts with the scouts. And that's where like all the hours that they put in and all the information, all the people they talk to at the schools and the players' hometown and everywhere else, they dig up anything they can to find out what makes each of these guys tick. And so you say a character concern, and you know, we drafted a guy in San Francisco who had character concerns, and he turned out to be one of the best players at his position, one of the best teammates I've ever seen, one of the best locker room guys, and just an outstanding human being. So you got to be careful where you get that information and who's giving you that information, and know your sources and all of that. But each character concern is really case by case, and you really figure out what the incident, if it's an incident, what it was, why that happened, find out all the information from them, from everybody you can, in order to make the best decision for your team. So, and there's a wide spectrum of character concerns. From, you have off the field things, you have football character, there's not really character, but then like mental and learning that you look into. So all those different things play into it, but everything's case by case, and try to get as much information as you can.
I think that's the correct answer. And you have to. You just have to have people that you trust throughout college football, throughout the agent world. And it's why when we talk about being, you know, a good general manager and having those relationships and not trying to, quote unquote, win every deal. You're not trying to, oh, I could have gotten a couple more dollars here or a couple more whatever there. You just be good to people and eventually it'll come back around. And the relationships that you build over the course of years and the trust that you build over the course of years for a guy like Adam, who took the scouting path, is someone who was on the road for years and years and years. Those things are invaluable. The relationships that your scouts have with not just the coaches, the position coaches, the coordinators, the head coaches at the college level, but the janitors, the lunch ladies. You go to a school a bunch of times, place like in Alabama, like you're a good scout. Like, you know the lunch ladies. You're going in there, you're having lunch multiple times, you're going to meet with players. So pull Janice aside for a chat. Janice knows who sucks and who doesn't. I want to know. But then you also need to have people on your staff that can do kind of real reporting, whether you call it intelligence gathering or like journalism type report, whatever, however you want to characterize it. But you ultimately need someone who can look at a prospect. I just use him as an example, like Mike Green, two sexual assault allegations. We got to figure out as much as we possibly can. And then we got to present that information to our general manager and our owner. And let him, let those two people and your head coach and let them make a decision at that level. So these are the things that have to happen on the character side. And when it's just a football character thing, do you look at a kid like James Pierce and think, Tennessee's kind of a mess. If we can get him out of University of Tennessee, we think he's going to be fine. Or do you be like, he's part of the reason why University of Tennessee is a mess. Like, these are the questions that you have to ask, and you have to have the sources and the resources to be able to answer those questions.
Number five.
You never want to purely look at one scheme and be like, this is who we're going to be forever. But I think there's certainly a plan to have some continuity. Certainly on the defensive side, Joe Witt Jr. might get head coach looks next year. You know Cliff Kingsbury is if they have another good season in Washington. So knowing that and also trying to balance the two sides of the ball, I thought that was an interesting way that this question was presented to Adam Peters by our pal Sam Fortier. How much do the coordinators influence who gets drafted ultimately Thursday night and through the weekend for Washington.
But the coaches are really involved. The coordinators are really involved in the draft process. And so when we're going through our draft meetings, you know, every position we go through in offense, Cliff is in there meeting with us, which is, you know, it's a long, long time for a coordinator to be in a meeting room. And then for the defense, Joe's in there. So they both give their opinions on really every player that we talk about. And so they put a ton of work in, and they do a great job of teaching us their vision for the player. If there's a player they really like, or the player that maybe they think is a good player, but maybe we don't have a vision for them, or they aren't the best fit for us. So really constant dialogue between those, you know, during those meetings, and then really from those meetings when they finished up last week until Thursday night and through the weekend, just understanding, okay, what do you think here between these two guys? And, you know, we'll come to a decision all together, but their input is you know, really important for us.
And it's why continuity can be so important over the course of years. If you have success and you lose coaches and you can keep the same system, then the players that you've drafted for that system continue to help you win football games. I will never forget, as long as I'm doing this, the conversation that the Rams released around Sean McVay and Puka Nacua. Les Snead was like, who do you like here in the fifth round? And what about the Nacua kid? And Sean's like, I know exactly what to do with that guy. And so if you have a vision for a player, it's pretty important, or that player is probably going to be more successful. And thus, it's really pretty important that the coordinator, the person who is structurally responsible for the offense or the defense, has a vision for that player. If the coordinator doesn't sign off, you probably shouldn't draft him. By the same token, by the way, that's how you get much of the mess of the Bruce Allen era. Bruce and his team and other people did whatever they wanted and didn't really care what the coaches thought. But you got to have a vision for a player. And if even though the coordinators might change out over time, that's the nature of the NFL. Either they're not good and they get fired, or they're good and they get new jobs as head coaches. You do have to make sure that you have a vision and a usage for any player that you draft, especially early, which does leave a question. If you've got, say, two really good wide receivers, two vets who you know who they are, what kind of wide receiver and does a wide receiver fit in? Would the Commanders take a receiver at 29, even though they've already spent on Terry McLaurin and will spend more this offseason with an extension, and obviously spend a fifth round pick to get Deebo Samuel?
Yeah, I think really every team every year is a little bit different, right? And so it would really just what's the best player that's going to help us now and in the future, and because that room's going to change next year, just like every other room in our building's going to change each year. It's going to evolve. So you know, if the best player we think is a player that's going to help us more than any other position, then we won't hesitate to take that.
And I think the detangling of that is we're not going to just take a, like, wide receiver might not be the top of their priority list. But if the wide receiver left on the board is way better than other positions that we might need more, we'll take the receiver because that player is going to help us the most. And that's how you have to look at it. It is always a combination of who's the best available and who helps our team the most. And the positions of need is always going to come into the helping our team the most side of it. And so we'll see what that ultimately means by the time the board shakes out at 29 on Thursday night. That is our pick six at six. Haven't done that in a while. Good to know it's still a club we can hit straight. Landed that sucker right in the middle of the fairway. And there might be more of that coming later in the week, because obviously Peters will talk after the first round on Thursday night, so we'll make sure that we're all caught up on Friday. With that said, we move off of the draft for the rest of the show, because there's only about 30 minutes left in it, and we will get to the NBA playoffs. Interesting night last night. I told you watch out for the Pistons. Plus, we'll take a look at the games on deck tonight in the NBA, and then real things, including a very funny moment where Adam Peters got super sideways in today's press conference in real things to end things out here on the Team 980. What in the hell is this, Anthony?
I heard this?
No, I've not. My head's apparently not in the game.
Did you never watch High School Musical?
I literally almost said, what in the High School Musical is this?
Yes.
I probably watched it like a long time ago, maybe.
Greg, you're really showing your age here.
What year did High School Musical come out?
I want to say like 2007?
Yeah, 2006. I was actually in high school.
Exactly.
So I'd probably outage Disney Channel for the most part.
Oh man, I hate that for you, Craig.
Yeah, I mean, good. Why did you play it now?
Because LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers need to get their head in the game.
Oh, that was a long setup there.
I apologize, Craig.
You know, just a heads up every once in a while would be nice. Hey, I'm going to do a bit here.
I got you.
Yeah. Sometimes Anthony takes over the show. What can I say? We'll get to Anthony's Lakers in a second. But I told you so. Anthony, yesterday, in this segment, maybe it was 6 o'clock, whenever it was that we talked to NBA yesterday. Oh, this segment yesterday, we were trashing Nico Harrison.
Yep.
I told you that the Knicks-Pistons series could go one of two ways. Either the Knicks would be like, okay, that was cute while it lasted. Or the Pistons would be like, oh, okay, we see where we messed up now. They came out, they knew where they messed up. It was close, but they were ready. Cade Cunningham is a dog. He is ready for this moment. I think the Knicks are in trouble. I think it is not a good matchup for them. Obviously, they're starting to get a little bit, like Josh Hart got a little banged up yesterday. I got real questions about whether the Knicks can get there. And it actually brings up, I think, a larger conversation about kind of what a team like New York is doing. Realistically, I don't think the Knicks can win a championship with this roster. Like, Jalen Brunson's really good. I would love to have a player like Jalen Brunson. Karl-Anthony Towns is really good. Mikal Bridges is really good. None of them are the best guy on a championship team. You can't stack three dudes in this particular case, who could maybe be the second player on a championship team and hope that that's going to overcome the ability of not having one of those guys. But they don't have an A1 dude. And they don't, like, I guess they could then trade one of those guys to get that guy. So I'm not saying that they're necessarily stuck, but it is kind of a thing where you run up, like, is Cade Cunningham actually the best player in this series? Is Cade Cunningham becoming one of those dudes? I doubt that Cade Cunningham becomes one of the six best players in the world, but he might. He's got a better chance than anybody else that I've talked about in this conversation. And that becomes a problem in playoff time. And maybe, again, the Knicks could absolutely win this series. And I think they probably will because they're the more experienced team. And they can absolutely go on the road in Detroit and get one back. But they are, I don't know how the Knicks get better, I guess is my point. Unless they trade one of these guys for one of the absolute stars of the game. And that doesn't really help them in 2025.
I mean, I think the Knicks are good, to be honest.
They are good, but they're stuck at good.
I mean, but the thing is, though, Craig, if you have a guy in Karl-Anthony Towns who has 10 points in the first half and scores zero in the second half, like, there's nothing you can really do. I do think...
But that's who he is. That's who he's always been.
You're right. He does not... Sometimes he does not show up in the playoffs. And also, I think the problem he had in Minnesota... probably why they shipped him out. He was too soft. And again, like, he's showing that right now. Now, I will say the refs are letting these guys play, though, Craig. Like, I've never seen basketball this physical in the modern NBA anyway.
Well, it would be less physical if Jalen Brunson didn't flop into everybody.
Yeah, that too.
I can't, like, it's getting bad, bro. Like, one of my least favorite players in the history of me watching basketball is Houston James Harden.
Yeah.
Because he just... just yeeted himself into everybody. And I'm like, what are we doing? Like, this ain't basketball. You're not playing pinball. You don't get points for bouncing off of stuff. Quit rewarding him. It's an offensive foul if it's anything, or just no call it. If the offensive player wants to fling himself into a defender and lose the basketball, let him.
That's but what, like, they're doing.
Some of the stuff with Brunson is brutal, man. You can't jump... Like, even if I'm closing out and I jump straight up and down and then you jump into me, that's not a foul on me. I'm allowed to jump straight up and down and block a shot or challenge a shot. It's ridiculous.
No, I would agree. But still, I think this has just been a super physical series in general.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of it goes. If, you know, New York is going to allow Detroit to bully them as they've done the last two games. And it was good to see, you know, K be able to close the game last night, because it did get concerning towards the end. Like, New York goes on that run again. I'm just like, oh, my God, they're not about to do it again. But, you know, K was able to, you know, hit some buckets down the stretch. So if they can just, you know, withstand that run that the Knicks are going to give them, I think you might be onto something, Craig. They could upset these guys.
The other thing, too, is, like, Mikal Bridges is not a three-point shooter, volume three-point shooter. He is unbelievable in the mid-range. He took 11 threes last night. Karl Anthony Towns needs to take threes. He took two. What the hell is that from the Knicks from a shot diet standpoint? That is not what you want if you're Tom Thibodeau. And if it is, then that's a problem. All right. The other game last night, man, this one, I'm going to be honest, Anthony, I didn't see much but some highlights today. Talk about physical and talk about stars being stars. Kawhi Leonard is still that dude. 15 for 19, 4 of 7 from 3. 39 points for Kawhi in 39 minutes to lead the Clippers to a 105-102 victory. Series tied at 1. Nikola Jokic needs some more help. They're just not getting enough from other dudes. You know, and Westbrook has 14 on a fine shooting night. Murray's got 23. But if you can, you know, keep Jokic in human numbers, which somehow for him 26, 12, and 10 is human numbers. Like, can you keep him sub 30? If you're going to keep him sub 30, Jamal Murray is going to need to have more than 23, which I realize 23 is not a bad night, but like they need to find a little bit more support. And then this series also defensively, like these teams are locked in. This is two games in a row that the scoring has been pretty like tame by modern NBA standards. The intensity of this thing is off the charts.
Yeah, this is definitely the most intense, most competitive series we're probably going to see. The 4-5 matchups have definitely, both of them, lived up to the hype. I will say in this game, the Nuggets had a chance. A couple of plays down the stretch where they didn't execute. Aaron Gordon missed a wide-open dunk. Jokic, they had a shot, you know, at the end. He turns the ball over. The Clippers end up getting the ball. Not doing anything on the possession, but The Nuggets would have had two possessions at the end of the game had Jokic not turned the ball over. But I will say he does need a little bit more help. But at the same token, Craig, the last 2 years, what they've gone to in terms of the two-man, Jamal Murray and Jokic in the fourth quarter, it works every single time. And I was surprised they didn't go to it on the last play of the game. I was so surprised.
Yeah. Well, the coach who's been calling that play is not there anymore. So.
Well, that too. But I'm just saying, like, fourth quarter, like, go with your bread and butter, man. Go
always
to it.
Don't overthink it, especially when overthinking it is that guy. Tonight, you got Bucks, Pacers, Grizzlies, Thunder, T-Wolves, Lakers. We'll talk about them next. But first, a look at what's trending. It's Hoffman Show wrapping up here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Again, tomorrow, Dan Pizzuta joins us talking NFL draft. And we are done at 6:15 tomorrow, so get your Hoffman Show while you can. We'll have the Nats and Orioles here on the station as the Capitals game will be over on 106.7 The Fan. Anthony, tonight your Lakers must win? Question mark? Are we in must-win mode? Considering they're down 1-0 in the series and will be headed on the road down 2-0 against Minnesota if they lose tonight?
Yeah, this is a must win. You can't go down 0-2 to start a series. Not many teams have come back. Granted, you know, LeBron James-led team has come back from down 3-1. So anything is possible, but if you want to actually give yourself a good shot of winning this series, you got to win game night. You got to.
Yeah. Now, that was a long time ago when LeBron did that. It was a different LeBron James, all due respect. That said, didn't Minnesota play that super weird series last year against Denver?
Oh, where they went down two and then they won the next two? Yeah. But I don't think they lost two at home and then won two on the road. Or is that really how it went?
That's what I'm trying to look up real quick. As I was saying that, I was like, wait a second. 2024 first round Timberwolves, that they smoked the Suns. Here we go. I want 20.
The second round.
In the first round, they smoked the Suns last year. But in the second round, they went at Denver, lost both games. They went at Denver, won both games. So they started 2-0 on the road, yeah, and then lost three in a row before going back to Denver, winning game six, and then winning at, or back home, we win game six. They then won game seven on the road against the Nuggets.
Yeah, but I still think this is a must win.
I agree. The chances
that is insane, though.
Yeah, it's crazy that they did that last year. But yeah, I genuinely think that for the Lakers tonight, you got to get back on track. And, you know, for them, they have to get more than Luka going. And they obviously, Luka's going to need to be great. Like, that is the burden of superstardom. If you are Luka Doncic, is you're going to need to have 30 and probably 8 rebounds and 8 assists. And LeBron, the burden of now being a second star, is you're going to need to have 25. 12 rebounds and 8 assists. But they need Austin Reeves to get going. They need to find shooting. They need their guys to hit shots. And in many ways, the game was very simple the other night. They could not hit shots to save their life. And their offense just felt very stagnant, which is not how J.J. Redick wants it. He wants the ball to move. And so I'm very curious how they come out tonight game plan-wise, what J.J. tweaks. And then the big, I think, roster question is, does Dalton connect? Get more minutes as a guy who we know can fill it from three as a floor spacer. Can they afford to get him on the floor, or is Minnesota going to hunt him defensively? And is Anthony Edwards too dangerous to have that happen?
Yeah, Bron and Luka combining for like 4 assists seems crazy. Like, if I was to place a bet on that, the under, oh my God, I would have been a rich man. But I agree. I definitely think they have to be more assertive. They got to account for more points, but Luka also just has to buy in on the defensive side of the ball, the effort side of the ball. It's been, you know, a criticism of his game, but like in a series like this, you got to get to them loose balls, man. They're going to want it more.
Yeah, you got to be locked in. It just takes a different level to be a champion. And, you know, Luka, I think, knows that. He made the finals last year. But now, different deal. Got to do it again. You got to lock in at that super high level. And we'll see. Obviously, Anthony Edwards, a nice game one. We'll see what they can do in game two. Julius Randle helping them close things out. So a little bit of a different attitude, a little bit of a different team this year for Minnesota without Karl Anthony Towns. Bucks get Damian Lillard tonight back. See if they can get a win on the road and split the first two games at Indy. And then Grizzlies Thunder. If the Grizzlies lose by less than 10, we'll talk about this series more. Until then... There's nothing to talk about. They lost. No. They lost game one by 51 points. Anything else from a housekeeping standpoint, Anthony? Good show today. It's all available on the podcast, or it will be soon, depending on what part of the show you're looking for. You heard from Adam Peters. We had Mitch Tischler. The Rooster talked hockey. We also jabbed each other. We got some pretty good haymakers in. Russell landed a nice little punch at the end.
Now, Russell's actually I understand why him and Linnell go back and forth.
Yeah, but Russell and I do that with like a smile on our face. They're not smiling when they yell at each other.
I think because Linnell takes it a little too serious. A little too.
I think they both take it a little too serious. But I do think it's more Linnell taking it seriously.
Yeah.
You can't. Speaking of Linnell, mock draft, 4 o'clock hour on Thursday. We're running 3 wide. Things could get crazy.
Uh-oh.
Do we let Linnell pick for Washington?
I mean, we've picked already.
Yeah.
I think we should.
Okay.
I mean, I'm interested to definitely see who he picks. And there's going to be a good run of defensive ends, so he has to make an insane pick.
Yeah, we'll have to do the math and see how that actually goes. But yeah, so that's the plan on Wednesday. Go 3 wide in the war room on that one. And other than that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we have reached the end of the program. It is time for Real Things Real People Said. Into real microphones.
Real things.
We're not going to be sucked this year.
Real people.
5-11. Not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
Adam Peters doesn't talk a lot, and when he does, he's not often a candidate for this very silly radio segment. But he got real sideways today in an answer and just totally lost his train of thought. And it was... very funny. And also, he was asked about the biggest challenge for his team this year after making the NFC Championship game. He refocused, and this is what he said.
Yeah, I mean, we're all starting at the bottom again. I think I lost that game more times than I wish to say, so it kind of stinks. But you don't just start there. You don't just start back in the championship game. You start at the bottom with everybody else. So that's the biggest challenge is building back up. But I take the lessons that you know, that you learned that year, you know, the good and the bad of your team. And there's a lot more good than bad for sure. There's very little bad. And just try to do the things that kind of help you put yourself over the edge for the next year. But it really starts right now. It started today, which was really cool. And I think we got a lot of great men in this room that are not in this room right now, but that sit in this room for the the guys. There's a lot of great men and women in this room currently.
Females.
Talking about our players. But but I think, you know, I totally lost my train of thought, but it's going to be a fun challenge, and I know our guys are up to it, I guess, is when I'll finish with that.
Donna got him with the question.
She stumped him.
Yeah. A lot of great men and ladies in that room, none of whom play football. Because they were in the team, for those that are like, what? They were in the team auditorium where they have their team meetings. And they did earlier today because the offseason program started today.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real things out of this. But did you see the video of Jaden getting back in the building?
When he was sprinting in?
Yeah, I guess he didn't want to be a part of the social video or whatever. And so he's like, no cameras. Just ran straight in. Dead sprint. Pretty funny. Had his cleats and everything. So that's our show today. We do have a funny other real things that I probably could have played because it's real short, but that's okay. We'll get it tomorrow. Our guy Drew Carter at the Boston Marathon. That's it. That's all. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. More NFL draft coverage because we do it a lot here on the Team 980.